Hello, my name is Brenda Hold. I am the Associate State Director of Community Outreach for the Arizona State Office of AAPI. It's officially Black History Month. AARP began the celebration with the observance of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday on January 15th and continues the celebration through February 28th. AARP strives to develop a year-round appreciation of Black history, life, and culture by spotlighting some of the great innovations and contributions African Americans have made, such as what you'll see today. We are glad you could join us in order to keep the celebration and acknowledgments moving forward, and we would also like to thank Boom Goddess Radio for the opportunity to collaborate. We hope you enjoyed today's program. Be safe and be well.
Welcome to Soul Star Live's crossover episode with Boom Goddess Radio. I'm your host, Calvin Worthen, sitting in with Sister Jennifer Davis Page, the host of Boom Goddess Radio. How you doing, good sister?
I'm fine, Calvin. Thank you so much for agreeing to do a crossover with me today with the Buffalo Soldiers of Arizona. We had the privilege of presenting there's six series in this Black History Month, and this is the last of the six. So this is our privilege to introduce the Buffalo Soldiers. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us. We have, I'd like to introduce all of you to our audience. We have Trooper Sam Freeman Jr. We've got Dr. Michael Ings. We've got Dr. J. And we have John Covington, and we would like to very much thank you all for joining us and giving us the information that we have lots of questions to ask you about the history of the Buffalo Soldiers. So again, we thank you.
Absolutely. So in this first segment, we want to just jump in and let's see if we can get a chance to know some of these gentlemen who are going to be giving us some information. So if you could just give us a little bit of your background, each one of you, and tell us your connection in relationship to, you know, why you know about the Buffalo Soldiers and how you support the Buffalo Soldiers in Arizona. So we can start with the chief, the president, Mr. Freeman, sir. Welcome to Soul Star Live.
Sam Freeman, Jr. I'm retired Air Force. And I moved to Tucson in 1996 from Berlin. And I got acquainted with this group, the Greater Southern Area Chapter of the Buffalo Soldiers, through Herman Warrior. And in the last 10, 12 years, I've been working with the group. And what we're trying to do is get everyone more knowledge on the Buffalo Soldiers. There's a lot of things that the Buffalo Soldiers did here in not only in Arizona, but in the Southwest area. But we are in regards to the Buffalo Soldiers of Tucson. That's what our chapter is about, the Buffalo Soldiers of Tucson. There you will hear about many different groups here, Fort Huachuca and Green Valley. But we are here in Tucson, and we have our own group. And we are associated with national. This is why we are, it's different than the other groups are.
Righteous. Thank you so much for coming on to Soul Star Live. And up next, we have a couple of different gentlemen here, these brothers on the line. I don't know if either one of you is willing to start and open up with us, but we have Brother Dr. J and Dr. Michael Ings. Welcome to Soul Star Live, gentlemen.
Thank you.
I've got a couple of questions I want to throw out to you gentlemen. One is, I want to start from the beginning of the Buffalo Soldiers. Can you tell me how did the all-Black cavalry and infantry get their name, Buffalo Soldiers? For our listeners that really don't know, can you tell us how you got your name?
Dr. Ainge?
There are several stories that relate to the naming of the Buffalo Soldiers. One of the first is the Cheyenne Indians saw them on the plains during a winter campaign. probably around 1870s, and they were wearing buffalo robes. And that's one of the particular stories. The other is that Native Americans admired their courage and their fortitude, and they compared them to their favorite thing, which was the buffalo, because the buffalo was the core of Native American life in the West during the Indian period. And those are the stories that we hear, but I think Dr. Langelier probably has a take on that as well.
The first time the term appears in print, it's in a New York newspaper called The Nation, kind of like a USA Today would be a local paper, as it were, but made national circulation. And a correspondent mentioned just that, that he was down in the Indian Territory, which today we would call Oklahoma and part of northern Texas, and observed this is the first reference of Black soldiers literally appearing in any publication of note. He uses the term saying some of the native peoples called them because of their resemblance to the Comanches and other tribal people in that area, to the buffalo, dark hair, dark skin. Originally, it was not considered to be a means of identifying with them as heroes. That comes later, and frankly, that part of the story. There are more stories where the Indians dislike the Black soldier as much as they dislike the white soldier and don't hold them in any particular high esteem. It would become a more important term, however, when a white artist came here to Arizona in the 1880s, a New Yorker who had essentially dropped out of Yale by the name of Frederick Remington. And in one of his, as he's growing in stature, he does an article based on coming to Arizona for the second time, and he calls it A Scout with the Buffalo Soldier. And at that time, we start getting a much more positive view of the Black soldier. And for the first time, a national and international audience introduced to a topic that they had never heard of and regrettably would kind of disappear into the woodworks until the civil rights movement, again in the 1960s, when the term becomes more popular and seen, thank goodness, more and more from that time period.
What percentage of the army was made up of the Buffalo soldiers originally?
Two out of every 10 cavalrymen was a Black soldier after 1866. And approximately two out of every 24 to 25 infantrymen were African Americans who had come into the service for the first time in 1866. Prior to that, discrimination did not allow Blacks into the U.S. Army. However, the Navy always had African Americans serving from the time of the American Revolution till this day.
Now, Charles Young was the first leader of the Buffalo Soldiers. Is that correct?
No, that's not correct.
No,
Henry Flipper.
Henry O. Flipper
West Point
was the first
serving the Buffalo Soldiers.
Yeah. Henry O. Flipper was the first Black graduate of West Point.
Okay.
And Hanks Alexander was the second graduate of West Point. And then Charles Young was the third graduate of West Point. Henry O. Flipper was the first Black officer associated with the Buffalo Soldiers, or I can't remember if it was the 9th or 10th Cavalry. John Hanks Alexander, there's not that much background information on him because he lived a very short life. And then Charles Young. Yes, Charles Young had a deep and brilliant career. And he was a leader at one time. For a brief moment there, he was a commander of Fort Huachuca, which was the only installation in the United States that housed or garrisoned all four Buffalo Soldier units, the 9th, the 10th Horse Cavalry, and the 24th and 25th Infantry.
What was Fort Huachuca? Was that the only fort that welcomed the Buffalo Soldiers?
It's not a matter of welcoming them, but, you know, Fort Huachuca was a very integral part of Arizona and the Southwest in their mission. So at one time or another, all four Buffalo Soldier units were stationed there, not all at the same time. And Dr. Langelier or Dr. Ames can go into depth a little bit more on this, but Fort Huachuca is the only American fort that housed all four units. It does have that distinction.
Okay, now, I one question about Mark Matthews. I read an article that said that he lived to be 111 years old. Mark Matthews, he was the oldest Buffalo soldier. He died in 2005.
Wow. Wow.
The oldest living World War II veteran is approximately 109, and he's African-American and lives in New Orleans. Right now, I'm working on a National Park Service. I'm the National Park Service historian for or as they use another term, but I'm actually the historian for the Park Service. And we're not only studying all the forts, there were over 30 forts for Black troops served, all the way from Ship Island in the Gulf of Mexico off of Mississippi to the Presidio of San Francisco to Fort Vancouver in the Pacific Northwest to Fort Buford, North Dakota, where they, I guess, were there to protect the Molson trade from coming into the United States. I'm not sure what that was about, but they were on the northern border. And so we have many of these soldiers will live a long life, but we know very little about them because, as most of my colleagues will tell you, this was a bachelor military for the most part for the enlisted men. There was a saying in the old army, if the army wanted you to have a wife, they'd issue you one.
that's just stay true today.
Officers even had a difficult time maintaining families. There weren't the kind of quarters and the type of things that fortunately we have today for family members. But some of these people would go home and unfortunately their stories would die with them. And so it's groups like the Southern Arizona chapter, the National chapter, the National Park Service, and frankly, everything from a private fort in Texas to other forts that are operated like Fort Huachuca that are still active duty. Fort Leavenworth was truly the original home of the 10th Cavalry, for instance, that maintains these stories. But if you go on to the Late Show, tell me how many times you see John Wayne and Randolph Scott and how many times you see Woody Strode portraying a cavalryman.
Right.
All right. That's all right. You know, we are about to come up on a break. You know, this is very informative. I'm really excited about having this conversation. And coming up, we're going to continue to dive into the history and the stories of the Buffalo Soldiers and their significance here in America. So I want to thank you all, our listeners, so much for joining in. Just stay tuned after this break. We're going to have more with all of our wonderful panel of guests who are going to inform us about the Buffalo Soldiers. There'll be more Soul Star Live and Boom Goddess Radio right after this break. Y'all stay tuned now.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now. And AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Soul Star Live, Boom Goddess Radio crossover episode, so we can learn a little bit more about the Buffalo Soldiers. So we got into some really heavy, heavy content there, but we about to go deeper. Sister Jennifer, Are you ready to lock and load? Because I got a couple of questions here on my own as well.
Absolutely. Are any of you direct descendants, or any of the men that are alive today, direct descendants of the original Buffalo Soldiers that you know of?
Not among in our group. There isn't any in our group.
Okay.
The only claim to fame I have is that my great-great aunt was the first Black school teacher in Detroit. That's the only claim to fame that I have.
That's all right.
But we have the warrior family in our group also.
And yeah, that's really significant. significant, Sam, to mention them, because the Seminole Negro Indian Scouts who came out of Florida are extremely important in Arizona history. We should definitely recognize them as part of the history of the Buffalo Soldiers.
So you're talking about the Negro Seminole tribe.
Yep. Yeah, they were basically put out by Andrew Jackson in 1836 when they moved the Seminoles to the Midwest, Arkansas first, then Oklahoma. The story that I hear is the Seminole Negro Indian Scouts decided to really get disgusted after they kept being moved and moved to Sonora, Mexico.
Hmm.
My focus is always, when did the Buffalo Soldiers and other Black people come to Arizona? And this is one story that's extremely compelling, wow. Especially because the family is still here with Herman Warrior's family. I believe his granddaughter's playing volleyball for the U of A.
That's correct.
In Arizona right now.
That's
yeah. So as a consequence, we really respect them, because they went to Sonora, Mexico, and after they were deported from Oklahoma, and served the Mexicans, because they gave them offers of land and citizenship. Then after the Civil War, they were told, yeah, you need to come back because we'll give you land and citizenship, because the Civil War had taken most of the soldiers away to fight the war in the East. And as a consequence, they didn't have anybody to scout the Apache. Mm. And so as a consequence, the Seminole Negro Indian Scouts were the scouts for the cavalry the Civil War of the 1860s. I think I'm correct in that chronology. Am I not, Dr. Langelier?
Well, essentially, they begin in the 70s in Texas. They actually are not active in Arizona at all. But I would recommend the viewers and the readers out there to get Kevin Mulroy, M-U-L-R-O-Y's book, Freedom on the Border. It is the definitive book on the so-called Maroon Society. Looks at the whole aspect of the Seminole Negroes, as they were referred to back in the 19th and early 20th century, as well as an excellent section on the Scouts, several of whom were Medal of Honor recipients.
What's the name of that book again?
The book is called Freedom on the Border by Dr. Kevin Mulroy. If you ever see Kevin, he looks like the fifth Beatle that never played with them. He's a charming British gentleman from Sheffield, England.
So Arizona has a pretty significant connection with the story of the Buffalo Soldiers, like their narrative. Are there any snippets of some juicy details that we can find out about the Buffalo Soldiers' interactions and how they were received even by the inhabitants here, that they were either, you know, to protect or to, you know, help to move along somewhere? Are there any stories that come out of these interactions and what the people here have perceived about them?
Well, one of the most interesting stories that we've heard recently that we did for the Arizona History Museum is the story of Henry Flipper, the first Black graduate of West Point. And as a surveyor, he was called upon to look at different land grants here in Arizona. And one of the land grants he looked at was the John Slaughter Ranch on the border. And John Slaughter being a somewhat difficult man to deal with, especially with Black people, did not like the fact he was coming in to survey his land and tell him what he owned and what he didn't own. Mm. So his wife, Slaughter's wife, said, well, if we invite him to dinner, maybe he'll give us a better deal. And the story is on the website of the Arizona History Museum. And that relationship with John Slaughter and Henry Flipper, the first Black graduate of West Point, is very compelling. Because, you know, John Slaughter went on to be the sheriff of Cochise County.
Oh, wow.
And one of his cowhands, Old Bat, as they called him, was a Black man. So though he may not have liked Henry Flipper very much, he had Black people at his back. Mm. So that story of the Slaughter Ranch, which we told down at Canoa Ranch earlier in the year to celebrate the Buffalo Soldiers and the Canoa Ranch, it, to me, is one of the most compelling stories of Buffalo soldiers in the Southwest, even though Henry Flipper had been dismissed from the military by that time. The relationship between African Americans and white people in the southern Arizona area is it's a compelling story, especially when you go several years later to the punitive expedition, which perhaps we can talk about later.
Absolutely. And Dr. Langlier?
The other story that is very related to what Michael has just mentioned is that Slaughter's ranch was massive, and it bordered, literally ran on both sides of the border. And because the border was a hotbed at that time, particularly in the 1860s through the early 1890s, when the 10th Cavalry first came to Arizona, a young officer put together a strike force of Apache scouts, Yavapai scouts, and hand-picked men from Troop K, his troop. This fellow's name was Houghton Clark. And periodically, they would have to proceed down to the border area, and Slaughter would host them. As Michael said, Slaughter had several ranch hands and others that he had brought from Texas. Many of us who are a little bit older will remember a TV show on Disney, Texas John Slaughter, but you'd never see an African-American in a television show of that era. But indeed, Slaughter, despite the situation with Texans often being very prejudiced against the black soldiers, particularly because they were also Union soldiers in their minds, which was something a double negative for them.
Okay.
The would spend a good deal of time on the border. And indeed, the border was one of the most quiet times from the 1880s through just before World War II, chiefly because of the black soldiers, specifically out of Fort Huachuca, maintaining law and order along the border.
Wow.
Wow. Didn't the Buffalo soldiers serve in World War II?
Yes, there were many African Americans that served in World War II. As a matter of fact, I just was part of an interview with a 102-year-old first lieutenant who was a member of the Women's Army Corps. Very rare, because there were only 600 officers in the entire Women's Army Corps during the war. But there were the famous Tuskegee Airmen, the troops that we tend to refer to as Buffalo soldiers, the 9th and 10th Cavalry, and as John said, the 24th and 25th Infantry, tended to maintain stateside border work, although several of the units were finally sent over to North Africa and then into the European theater of operations.
Okay.
Yeah, if you look at Spike Lee's novel, Miracle at St. Anne's, you'll get a really good view. The movie as well. Will give you a really good view of some of the service that the black troops did in World War II and how they fought all the way up the Italian peninsula. So there are some more recent resources for young people, especially like the Miracle of St. Anne's, Spike Lee joint, that will help young people who are our primary audience at this point, because we're trying to get them into this story. So they can see more of the activities of the Buffalo soldiers during that particular period of time.
And if we have any educators listening to this, hopefully we'll take some of this message out to the young people in their classes. They might want to read a book called The Employment of Negro Troops. It was written back in the 1950s, and it is a massive work that is online from the U.S. Army Center of Military History. So it's free and can be downloaded. And it is perhaps still today, 50 plus years later, the definitive work on the employment of black soldiers. You have to understand that the racism that these soldiers fought, John can attest to this, and so can Michael. There was a saying, the double V, victory against the fascists, victory against racism at home.
Wow.
Many of these soldiers.
Yeah, we have a term for that. It's called indemnity. You know, people serve not because they wanted to, but oftentimes because it was the better life. Both the Buffalo soldiers from the 1866 through 1800 period and then into World War II served because they were looking for what's called indemnity. It's a legal term. And it means if a person serves and protects you, they need to be rewarded and respected. And that probably never truly happened. And yet the Buffalo soldiers served well. And when you look at indemnity as a term, you have to realize, even up until today, many of us veterans, like John Covington, who's sitting with you today, and Sam Friedman, were actually being driven by indemnity. We felt if we served, like my father served, like I served, that we would receive some sort of greater respect from the American society. Though oftentimes, as the soldier sitting with me can tell you, that never really happened.
We need to look at
The motivation of these people who served our country as veterans and as soldiers. And one of the ways to look at it is from indemnity, because we gave it to other people of color. If you go out to the Native American reservations, you'll see pictures of their veterans. They were also looking for indemnity. So there's a lot more going on here than just the historical factors that drove these people to serve in such an isolated and desolate area. They were looking for something about the American dream. And whether they received it or not is another question that needs to be asked to those people who served.
Yeah, to your point, I was going to ask some of that about the motivation of it, because in the time that the Buffalo Soldiers were being asked to form a regiment, there was a civil conflict. There was a war going on that they couldn't participate in, but they were relegated to participate in, with the hope of, you know, upon victory, you're going to be
indemnity. Yeah, with the hope of indemnity. I mean, if you look at Charles Young, for example, the third black graduate of West Point who chased Pancho Villa into Mexico, what you see is when he came back in 1917 from serving almost a year in Mexico chasing Pancho Villa, and the Buffalo Soldiers defeated by the Mexican army the name is escaping me, but nonetheless.
Carousel?
Yes. Carousel. What you see is him writing a letter to his wife to justify the fact that he just donated most of his pay to the Anti-Lynching League, which was the precursor to the NAACP.
Oh, wow.
And he gave not only his pay, but the pay of many of his soldiers to the Anti-Lynching League as he came back from fighting Mexicans. And in Atlanta, Philadelphia, other places in the country, the black newspapers were saying, why are you down there fighting people of color, the Mexicans, when we got a problem right here?
Wow.
With lynching. So the difficulty that Buffalo Soldiers had in justifying their service on both sides was a very compelling story, and a story that oftentimes is not told to our children through the books that they read. We have to understand that the motivation of these men, like the men, myself, my father, the veterans sitting here with us, are very complex. And I think young people need to understand that part of the story, because if they don't understand that part of the story, it's just words on paper.
Yeah.
I think also it goes to the point of serving something bigger than yourself.
Mm.
And that's very, very important. I was doing a little bit of research because we are working on a Buffalo Soldier memorial here, and we're finishing it up. But I was looking at one of the wars that the Buffalo Soldiers were involved in, and one of them was the Philippines War. And Ida B. Wells questioned why blacks were over in the Philippines when they weren't getting the same fair treatment here. So that has always been kind of some of the minor themes about when black military men would go out and serve this country and fight for this country. The question always came up through different circles and powerful circles within the African American community. Why are you doing this?
Mm.
When you have the racism here at home, you know, how can you go out there and do it? So it's a kind of a double-edged sword, but again, it goes back to indemnity and serving something greater than yourself.
I'm going to tell you right now, I never even heard of that word, and I appreciate you for expanding my vocabulary. because I will be making sure I exercise the use of that word, because that's something I always question. I have family who has served in the military, and I made my choice not to, because I'm not a fan of war.
Your choice is was your choice, okay? But a lot of things happened when the black soldiers returned from war, okay? In uniform, there was many black soldiers that were lynched.
Wow.
Still in uniform, okay? And being in the military, I was there for 23 years and in the 60s, and I saw a lot of the problems that the other older guys had gone through. We had a lot of problems. We had a lot of problems with racism in the military, okay? In the 60s, when I went in, there was a lot of problems.
Did you have a choice? Did you have a choice to go?
I had a choice. Yeah, I could go to jail.
Yes.
Or go to the military.
Tell us.
Is that a choice?
No, sir.
Mm-hmm. This is what happened during that time. They were taking blacks off the streets and giving them a choice to either go in and be drafted. I was number one on the draft in the state of Ohio. Number one.
Wow.
So I either went in, but instead of going into the Army, I went into the Air Force.
Wow.
And it has always been hard on the black military people.
Many of us didn't have that kind of choice. My father, for example, served in World War II, went to Germany when I was a kid because he was working in the steel mills of Pittsburgh and Newcastle, Pennsylvania, and he hurt his hand. And my mom and my grandma said, listen, they're going to kill you in that steel mill. Go back in the military. And at the same time, Truman integrated the service.
Oh, wow.
So my father went into the service from a master sergeant's rank in World War II as a second lieutenant and served as a company commander in the combat engineers on the border with East Germany. And they sent the family with him because they knew he wouldn't leave during the Cold War. He's not going to leave.
Wow.
He's going to fight it out. So we have many motivations for why we serve as black people in the military. And the Buffalo Soldiers inspire us because they tell us a story. They're giving us a story about how you're trying to achieve indemnity in this particular culture.
That's righteous. Thank you so much. We're going to take a quick little break. I'm excited because this conversation is so enriching, because I like to find out more about what's going on with this country that we live in. And you know, you're opening up light for us all here. So thank you so much for this collab episode. We smashing it together. Boom Goddess Radio, Soul Star Live. We got one more segment right after this break. I want you to stay put, stay tuned. Have a good one. See you right after this break. That's what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick break.
Don't go away.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
Ugh, what are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
What are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. It's been a long time since we've had an adventure in the forest.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
You're right. I should get out.
Yeah, the forest is not that far away.
Hey, Mom!
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Soul Star Live and Boom Goddess Radio collab show to discuss the famous and more obscure to the rest of us, Buffalo Soldiers. And so thank you so much for listening in. Sister Jennifer, I'm excited about this conversation because, I feel like we need to dive right in, because this was such a mystery to me. I feel like I done learned something new already.
Well, that was the whole point of having this program, is have you and all of our listeners learn something about the Buffalo Soldiers. Walt Richardson, you had some questions for the gentleman?
Yeah. First of all, I just wanted to thank all of you for the work that you're doing and keeping the story alive as a part of the history, because it's very important that this idea of the American dream, and everybody who's participated in it, all of the stories get up front. So what you're doing is vitally and vitally important in talking to the youth. I was hoping to get my nephew on to have him in the discussion, because there's a huge disconnect in what's going on in the planet today as far as politics, as far as how we move forward. The stories are all getting blurred. The lines are, you know, there's a movement to keep the information in a certain place, but yet we're in the information age, and this is the time when all this needs to come out. Mm-hmm. A lot of things that you said have touched my heart, because I am the oldest of eight of a military family. We grew up in the Air Force. My father is a retired Chief Master Sergeant in the Air Force of 32 years. In 2010, he was recognized as a Tuskegee Airman for his term, and he was also awarded the Congressional Gold Medal. At the same time, he's passed now, but we were at the table, and he basically told us the whole story of his time in the Air Force right before we were born, and then we lived out the rest of the experience, what it was like to travel to Japan in the 50s, going from Pensacola, Florida, Eglin Air Force Base. All the places that we had to find where we could stop that was safe, getting to San Francisco and Travis to get overseas, and coming back when we came back. There's a lot there. In terms of what the Buffalo Soldiers and the Tuskegee Airmen, I'm sure that there's a connect there where the idea of what you were talking about, indemnity, fighting for an idea that run close, that's in my blood and in my heart. Seminole Indian blood is in our people. I graduated high school at Clark Air Base in the Philippines. So all these places you're talking about, I've lived and experienced what has happened there. I became an artist because after I went through boot camp at ROTC in 75, at Fort Knox, Kentucky, I realized that it was going to be more beneficial for me to use my military discipline inside the community, a civilian community, as an artist, as a musician, so that I could stay out of the way of a lot of things, but yet still stay up in front and perform in the places where it's most where you can teach and use art as a teaching tool. And so I say that because I'm hearing a lot of songs in what you folks have just talked about. That's why I've been asking a lot of those questions and everything. So, but I want to go back to the beginning of the program, and it was talked, there was something said that there was a negative aspect of the perspective of the Buffalo Soldiers, and then later on that kind of perspective shifted. Can you talk a little bit about what was that negative perception that was going on, and where did it come from? And the other question I have is, the people who enlisted and came into the service, where did they come from? North, south, how were they, where was that population coming from?
Good question, yeah.
Well,
with where you began, I think that you have to realize many of us had the same experience. In the 1950s, well, we drove, my father and my family and I drove from Fort Carson, Colorado, to New York to travel to Europe, where he was being deployed. And we had the same experience. It's like the Green Book experience.
The Green Book, yes, exactly.
Never exactly. Know where you're going to be able to eat. Yeah. And the look on my father's face every time he came out of a restaurant and drove away without us eating or being able to go to the bathroom.
Right.
Sticks in my memory for a long time because he was in uniform.
Yeah.
All the way.
Yeah, know? we packed food and we stayed at convents and stuff like that all the way through. Yeah.
Yes. But you know, I think the thing that I perceive is the message that needs to go to young people that may relate to your question, and I'm sure others of our panel can talk to it as well, is that there was a long history of 500 years prior to the Buffalo Soldiers. And that planted the picture of African Americans in the Southwest, especially here in Arizona, in the minds of the people. Yeah. So their treatment was varied based on their ability to contribute. So, for example, we talked earlier about the Slaughter Ranch. And one of the things I hear from Buffalo soldiers to this day, especially those who ride on horseback, is you can tell from a distance whether a man can sit a horse. And if he can sit a horse, he's going to be valuable. And therefore, you treat him based on his ability to contribute to the community. And so we not only have the Buffalo soldiers during this period, we have one quarter of the cowboys in the West, which are not shown, were of African descent because they could sit a horse. You also don't tell the story as you talk about the Buffalo soldiers of the women. You know, they weren't living exclusively on bacon, beans, and hardtack. Many times behind them were Black women who were planting the gardens at Fort Huachuca, which we've discovered.
Oh, wow.
Planting the food that we still eat. So my wife and I are doing studies of the foodstuffs that people ate, because they weren't just women. There were men as well. And Kathy Williams was not the only one. Granted, she served in the Buffalo Soldier units, but there were women behind them. You know, you look at a picture of the Fort Huachuca Choir of 1924, 7 years after the punitive expedition. And the men surrounding the women, they had already set up. They had already served up as far as Utah as a community. So we are just beginning to delve into the stories. And I think the important point for me is this is a story about free people. It's not a slave narrative.
Thank you.
Which we're bringing from the East to talk about.
Thank you for that. I appreciate that.
See, it's about a free people. And kids nowadays need to hear about free Black people back in time, as well as the Buffalo soldiers.
That's right. That's right.
You also asked about, you know, where these soldiers came from. It brings me back to the movie of Glory, which is a great movie. But Blacks had always served in the military. From the first casualty of the Revolutionary War was Christmas Addict.
Yeah.
So we always have served in the military. But in 1866, after the Civil War, due to Army Reorganization Act of 1866, the six Black units were formed or allowed, is probably a better word, in peacetime.
Hmm.
This was the first time that organized Black units were allowed to serve in peacetime. And these Black men came from every quarter, every walk of life in America at that time. And it continues.
And essentially, like, these soldiers were lumped together because of pigmentation. I mean, we're talking, these could have been islanders, these could have been, you know, people who have copper tone and darker skin from any region that is over in this area. But because of that one connecting fact, they all were lumped in to this Buffalo Soldier regiment. Based on that alone, based on pigmentation of skin alone.
Yeah, but the fact is the first African-American people came to Arizona before it was Arizona. We're talking 1538, the first person of African descent came to Arizona. His name was Esteban. Yeah. That's 60 years before Jamestown.
Yeah.
1619.
Wow.
You see what I'm saying? So we go back a long way. So I don't want to steal the story from the Buffalo soldiers, but if we're going to talk to kids, we got to make sure they understand the story of free people who came here before slaves came to Jamestown in 1619.
Righteous.
Perhaps we need to have another program.
I think so.
I think we need to have another program. So So that's valuable information to our young people. Before our clock ticks down on us, let me just ask you about Kathy Williams. We talked a little. You mentioned her name. Like someone tell me the story about Kathy.
John.
John. Kathy Williams was the only female at the time that served with the Black soldiers. And she passed for a male for a couple years before, I think, she took very sick and she had to have a physical. And at that time, when she had a physical, they discovered that she was a female.
You're telling me this warrior woman was able to go through the whole introduction piece of being a part of an army regiment and for years undiscovered of her gender you call it, or you know, whatever.
Well, you have to think about it. Wow. I mean, she was there, she was serving. So I would have to assume that other Black soldiers knew of her gender.
Okay.
And if they didn't have a problem with it, then she was probably okay.
All was well.
I think it was the bravery, the fortitude, the personality of a person. How well did she carry her weight?
Exactly.
If you want to put it in those terms, she must have carried it pretty good, because she was accepted.
Yeah.
Being in the military is a different animal. It's corps d'esprit, it's morale, close quarters, and all of that goes into being a military person, regardless of service. It's a different type of life.
Yeah.
And you earn respect by how well you did your job, how well you respected other people, how well that you were willing to give up something in order to see the mission through or to see your fellow soldier protected.
Wow.
So all that stuff came into play, I believe.
And she's going to be having a biopic soon, right? Is that what we're going to be raising some funds for? I need to know how this story, even if we have to piece it together, man, this sounds like a very exciting story.
Well, and I think her episode, and I can't say for sure, but her episode probably was a motivation for some of the other Black women that came into the military and served.
Wow.
If you guys were up there in Phoenix, there's a descendant of a group called the 6668.
Okay.
Which was the all Black unit that delivered the mail in England during World War II.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this, you talk about the Buffalo Soldiers, but the Buffalo Soldiers had a connection with the Tuskegee Airmen in that Benjamin O. Davis, who was, I think, the fourth graduate of West Point, and then his son, Benjamin O. Davis Jr., who was Benjamin O. Davis was the first Black general. Then his son was the first Black general in the Air Force.
General Davis was 4-star, wasn't he, John?
Nope. Yes.
Yes.
Later.
And then there's also another connection with another very important Black group in the United States, and that's the Masons.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah.
The other tie-in is, as we all know, we always think of Dr. King and the extraordinary work he and the church have done, but there were Black chaplains. Actually, the regiments, the Buffalo Soldier regiments, had chaplains assigned to them. White regiments did not. In theory, those chaplains were not only the spiritual leader of that unit, but they were the school teachers. They ran the library. And going back to what Dr. Ings was saying, this was one possibility coming out of dreadful experiences, whether you were working in the factories in Massachusetts or having been with an enslaved family prior to the war, a chance for education and betterment long before Tuskegee became a major school with others preaching that. The black chaplains were extraordinary. Chaplain Ellensworth, who served here in Arizona and was a circuit rider in some respects, would go to these soldiers. He started what many of the people in this group would recognize as an Operation Bootstraps, how soldiers would learn more than just soldierly skills, but skills to go out into the world afterwards to run businesses, to have jobs that were not demeaning, but were actual jobs to make a living and be someone in their families. And these chaplains were all extraordinary in their own right. One of the chaplains, Chaplain Stewart, his wife was a black woman, of course, because in those days you didn't have much choice. You could be lynched or go to jail. His wife was an MD.
Wow. Oh, man.
We only have a couple of minutes left. I have one quick question. I've not had the opportunity to visit the National Museum of African American History and Culture in D.C. And can you tell me how are the Buffalo Soldiers' military contributions and cultural impact displayed at the museum?
Anybody?
Very minimally. I was there two summers ago, and they are portrayed very minimally. Much of the history of Arizona, including the Buffalo Soldiers, is seen as Mexican history, not American history, because this was Spanish territory for so long. And so I didn't see a good representation. I think that's why the story is so compelling, is that we in Arizona really need to tell the story of how we were one of the first places that black people had an influence in what is now the continental United States, instead of relegating it to Mexican history.
Yeah, thank you so
much. There's a museum.
We have to close the episode of the show, gentlemen.
I'm going to steal another 30 seconds, though, but because I want to thank all of you. I can't close out without Calvin and I.
This has been so great.
For sharing these amazing stories and coming to Boom Goddess Radio and Soul Star Live, and I want to know if you'll come back. We just ran out of time. We haven't run out of stories, so please come back.
Be willing to do that, very much so. But one quick plug: Tucson Buffalo Soldier Memorial.com.
That's righteous.
All right.
Yes,
that's what we're working on here in Tucson. It's going to be reality. Hopefully, the first week of May.
Thank you so much. We appreciate you all together, Mr. Freeman, retired Air Force, Dr. Michael Ings, Dr. J, Dr. John Langlier, good brother, retired Air Force, John Covington. And we want a special thanks for Walt Richardson II for showing up and giving us a good question. Sister Jennifer Davis Page of Boom Goddess Radio, thank you for co-hosting with me.
Thank you, Calvin. And thank you, gentlemen, very much.
This has been another episode of Soul Star Live and Boom Goddess Radio, the collab. Thank you so much for tuning in. Have a great week and good night.